SolidJS is a popular JavaScript framework known for its reactive and efficient rendering system. Instead of using a virtual DOM, it compiles its templates to real DOM nodes and updates them with fine-grained reactions. Ryan Carniato is the creator of SolidJS, and he joins the show to talk about the framework. This episode is hosted by Taylor Nodell. Check the show notes for more information on Taylor and where to find him.
Hi, Ryan. Welcome to Software Engineering Daily. Can you share a little bit about your background and how you got into web development and programming?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I got into programming because I wanted to make video games when I was really young. I got into web development because I was trying to make websites for my band. I played in a punk rock band and I wanted to advertise it. And this was the early days of the web, like 96. And I learned HTML and some rudimentary JavaScript back then.
Was it just like a basic static site that was like, hey, here's my band, come see our shows? Or
yeah, oh yeah.
What was
yeah,
it like?
Yeah. Yeah, like I'm talking like tables, like just all tables with images in them. And like I did a little bit of fancy programming. There was like a CGI bin and I wrote a Perl script for our guest book. So, you know, people could add comments and then show up.
That's pretty cool. For 97, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was a good introduction to this stuff. I'd been kind of like the local computer fix electronics kind of guy when I was like a kid. And it was very natural with the dawn of the web for me to kind of start making websites. And then next thing I know, it was like local businesses and friends of mine kind of stayed in that kind of contracting thing. But I was too busy with school and my band.
Okay. So fast forward a couple of years. In 2018, you create SolidJS. Can you give us a high-level introduction to SolidJS? What specific problems or challenges did you aim to address when you started the project? And how have those motivations evolved over time?
Yeah. In order to get there, we have to go back a little bit before 2018. I was doing web dev through, I'd say, professionally through most of the 2000s. And I kind of got back into this JavaScript-centric single-page app thing right out the gates around 2010-ish. And for me, there was a library called Knockout that was my tool of choice. I felt refreshed again. I'd been doing .NET. I'd been doing all this kind of like heavy, bulky server rendering, partial kind of thing. And it was really nice to just kind of go write JavaScript in a, you know, Notepad++ editor and just get back to kind of the web as I remembered it when I was younger. And I was really into it. I liked the patterns. I'd make like games for fun, like little like Sudoku and like different types of like puzzle games, because the reactive model that Knockout had presented was really powerful. I just set the rules once and then the program would kind of run itself. Basically, it was based on this idea of reactivity where you had these reactive atoms, like data that you could set up, and then you could listen to it and react to it simply by just accessing those values inside another function. And you could just write your whole thing out in front of you and you could just see it and then it would just run. It was very different at the time, and I just fell in love with this pattern. Unfortunately, the library kind of fell a bit out of the wayside. Other libraries came out like React, and I was never quite on board. And I wanted to bring back these patterns. So around 2015, I started my exploration there, kind of made the first version of what would become Solid at summer 2016. Kept on tinkering away, looking at benchmarks, kind of wanting to prove that this was a viable direction, because people had really gone into this whole virtual DOM, re-render everything on every change kind of mentality. And this was not that. This was where you just ran once and then just like little things updated fine-grained exactly as they needed to. So yeah, 2018 was an important year for the project, definitely, because that's when I open sourced it. But it was mostly because I'd finally gotten to a point that I wanted to put in public benchmarks. I wanted to show that the performance was good and that it was, you know, an option. So yeah, I think April 2018, I open sourced it, entered the benchmarks, JS framework benchmark, probably the most popular one, the one with all the color splotches people might have seen before. And yeah, Rest is history. We got pretty much to the top of that benchmark almost immediately. And we've been up there ever since. I guess that was like, yeah, quite a while ago.
Yeah, can you compare the paradigm of fine-grained reactivity to the virtual DOM refreshing everything on the page and why that causes an increase in performance?
Mostly, it's kind of like the old comparison. And again, I'm a graphics programmer background. There's this idea of retained mode versus immediate mode. And one model is meant to be kind of viewed as being more simplistic in that this is immediate mode where every single frame, you know, it re-renders everything. And then you don't have to worry about any kind of persistent state. You don't have to worry about anything. It just kind of handles itself because you know that anything changes, it's just going to redo everything. As it turns out, redoing everything is not the cheapest thing to do. Like even if you can make it cheaper, use, you know, a virtual DOM instead of a real DOM, you're still going through and constructing these objects in a first pass and then diffing it and then seeing what changed. Whereas the DOM, interestingly enough, is a retained mode API. It's something that sits there and you mutate it. So it's a very natural fit for reactive systems where you basically, as I said, set up the relationships, set up the rules, kind of like a spreadsheet. And then when one cell changes, well, you know which other cells depend on it and you just do the work there. So in the case of something like the DOM, it means that you update some text, maybe a count somewhere. I know this is a trivial example. And then somewhere else, the text in the DOM updates and nothing else reruns. So yeah, there's some overhead there on constructing the graph initially, you know, the kind of memory. But on the update performance is really fast. And a lot of my early work into Solid was figuring out how to make that creation cost also very fast. And that's like when we solve that problem, that's really when we could show it's viable from a performance standpoint. Keep in mind, like it wasn't performance why I got into it in the first place. I just really liked the patterns. It was clear for me. And I know not everyone kind of agrees with this necessarily, but it was clear for me to actually just like set up these rules, make the data special, and then, you know, just kind of let it run.
Yeah, for sure. So that's like sort of React has this virtual DOM model. When you're coming from a React or a virtual DOM model, JavaScript framework, and then you're looking at Solid, what is the change sort of in the developer experience when you're coming from this other world and you're looking at Solid for the first time? What sort of problems do developers or issues or things to look out for developers coming into Solid? What should they look out for?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest result of this change is that components aren't special in Solid. They are just a function that tends to run once. And this is very different where in a virtual DOM library, the components are kind of like the universe, like they own state. They, you know, when you set some update on it, it'll cause it to rerun that function again. So there's this sort of like, you don't see it necessarily with hooks as clearly as you did with old class components, but there's this like mentality of these units that own their own state that rerun. Whereas in a reactive framework like Solid, you can create reactivity in the process of running it, the component the first time, but the component generally never runs again. It's the specific interactions inside. So like this is a thing that does catch React developers off guard because they'll do something like, I don't know, try to put an early return, like an if statement in the middle of the component. And it's like, no, this doesn't run again. If you want something conditional, it's more that the thing you return has to be conditional. For example, that could be just JSX, right? If you return some JSX that is conditional, then it can change. But like an early return with an if statement, it's only going to run once. So yeah, it is definitely a departure in mental model. I'd say it's more declarative, right? React tends to run things over and over again. So there's a very this, then this, then this, then this. Even with hooks, which look kind of declarative, there's still this like in order. That's why order matters. That's why the hook rules exist. Whereas in Solid, you actually don't have any of those hook rules in the same sort of way. Component runs once, but it does come off with that trade in terms of kind of understanding that because it runs once, things are different than React or virtual DOM library.
Yeah, so I think you've explained how reactivity works in Solid.js. There's also this other component, signals. They're one of the main primitives in Solid. Can you explain how signals have existed within the history of front-end web development? Because this is not the first time that we've heard about signals, but they're a prime feature of Solid.
Yeah. I gave them a rebrand, I guess. And I got that from my own inspirations, like SJS called them signals. It's mostly that early libraries that basically had the same reactive patterns called them observables. And unfortunately for everyone, observables is also the name of RX or RxJS reactivity, which is a completely different thing. So I didn't like the ambiguity there. So I kind of was like, started pushing it as a new name, even though it is the same reactive Atom primitive that I was talking about, that you found a knockout, basically. It's been updated over time. We have better patterns now, but essentially knockout had it, views had it kind of hidden behind their option API. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, they released it separately as a composition API. Different versions of it, even like Felt's predecessor, Reactive, had a version of this. They've existed throughout front end in one form or another. It's just they've been serving different purposes. A reactive system doesn't really care what you do with it. It's just like, okay, it's like an event system. Like if I told you I had an event system and like you wouldn't know what that did. You just knew that it would fire events. It wouldn't tell you what my application is. And Signals is kind of like that too. It's just a pattern. So it's what you do with it that matters. And that's kind of one of the biggest differences. The earliest signal libraries, like back in 2010, like Knockout, actually are more similar to Solid than what people have been doing with signals for the last decade. Knockout used to do it fine grain. They used to go, you know, this update updates this one thing in the DOM, for example. What's kind of happened with Vue and then most of the other libraries that have done, pretty much all the other libraries have done reactivity over the years, even MobX and React and all this, is they fed into those systems' virtual DOMs or into their re-render models. And it's not until very recently, kind of pushed a bit, I guess, by what we've been doing here with Solid, that we're seeing people going back to actual fine-grained rendering again. When we came out, none of the major frameworks were taking that approach, you know, back in 2018. And to this day, none of the major frameworks have taken up this approach yet, but they're all saying that it's in their roadmap. Svelte 5 with Ruins will be probably the first to launch with the same kind of rendering that Solid does. There's also Vue Vapor that is coming out that also is the same rendering that we do. And I expect to see more of this in the future.
Yeah, it's definitely looking at the actual DOM now and updating that directly instead of having this virtual DOM idea. That's interesting.
As a listener of Software Engineering Daily, you understand the impact of generative AI. On the podcast, we've covered many exciting aspects of Gen AI technologies, as well as the new vulnerabilities and risks they bring. HackerOne's AI Red Teaming addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses launching new AI deployments. Their approach involves stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. Within the HackerOne community, over 750 active hackers specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and safety testing. In a single recent engagement, a team of 18 HackerOne hackers quickly identified 26 valid findings within the initial 24 hours and accumulated over 100 valid findings in the two-week engagement. HackerOne offers strategic flexibility, rapid deployment, and a hybrid talent strategy. Learn more at hackerone.com/AI. That's HackerOne.com/AI.
SolidJS has these three core primitives: signals, memos, and effects. Effects and memos are pushed onto a global stack before they're executed, and any signal that is read checks if there's a listener on the stack and then adds the listener to its subscriptions. This makes sense in like a synchronous environment, but a lot of the web depends on getting data from somewhere else. So how do you handle asynchronous code?
Yeah, this has been one of the most interesting explorations for our work in Solid the last couple of years, right? Getting V1 out was all about just, you know, using the patterns that I'd been familiar with. And then the last couple of years have been a lot of SSR. But once you get into SSR, async even pops up more. What, on a simple level, fine-grained reactivity does solve async in a funny way, in that you view async stuff, you know, data fetching as data coming from outside the system being brought in. So the old, you know, use effect trick, you know, in React that everyone's like, oh, don't, you know, this is awkward because, you know, the re-render and all that. Well, we don't re-render. So like, and it's, you don't even need the create effect really. If you went in a component and created a signal and then went promise, then write signal, you'd have an async solution. And yeah, you'd obviously have to check if the signal had a value yet. You'd have to do like null check. But if you think about it, it's not blocking your system until you get to that point where you do the check. So essentially, and because we only render once, wherever you read that signal, well, that's it can render all the way up to there. And then when the signal, you know, completes later from the promise, it'll just continue where it left off. So that has always been super, super powerful. It has nothing to do with components, no re-render, just like literally render as much as you can, then render more when you get more. That's good. I wanted to take it a bit further. So a lot of work that we did with Solid was looking at if we could build more interesting async models, kind of invert control. One of the more interesting things I think that React showed us was possible with the concurrent rendering wasn't all those like spinning radar demos with 3D stuff or, you know, all that like performance stuff they're kind of talking about, but actually the fact that like, wouldn't it be great if you're on a current page interacting with it and then went to go navigate to the next page and be able to actually start loading and running the next page before the current page unmounted. And there's ways to do that with signals or any kind of system kind of by hoisting it top level. But it was really interesting to try and solve that problem from a like inversion of control pattern. And that's what Suspense does in React. And I have to admit, when I first saw that, I was like, wow, this is what I've always wanted. So we implemented Suspense with data fetching back in 2019. And for the last 4 years, we've been using Suspense on the client and the server, doing these kind of patterns. What this allows us to do is basically let the way you lay out your UI determine where the loading indicators are, and even be able to do things like, as I said, keep the current page active while the next page is going with stuff like transitions. And yeah, I have to admit, took that pattern from React, but it was able to apply it the same way because while we don't have a virtual DOM, we have a reactive graph. And as it turns out, the reactive graph and data propagation is not that different than the virtual DOM, funnily enough, in that most, in the way that Solid has those three primitives, signals, derived signals or memos, and effects, well, you can look at basically the derived signals as the pure part of the execution, the same way React has their render phase. And it's possible for us to basically get all the data we need and derive it in a completely non-side effectful way, completely pure. And basically, I know this is crazy, when we do writes in a transition, fork the reactive graph, kind of like git, and then merge it back together without running any of the side effects until we actually consume it and update the DOM. And this works, and it's super powerful. And I've been having a lot of fun with this. The biggest challenge we've had with this async approach is that we kind of, I wouldn't say jumped the gun, but we released our version fully with data fetching primitives 4 years ago. So we've learned a lot during this time. And React didn't release these primitives till about a year ago. And then people really haven't been using it till the last 6 months. They kind of went a slightly different way. I appreciate some of the differences that they've gone on because yeah, I could have used some of their learning as well. So we're kind of with Solid 2.0, probably the biggest thing that we're working on is kind of refinement to our async patterns. I think we got it mostly right. It's really incredibly powerful when we can make a single primitive, in our case called create resource, which basically turns a promise into a signal. And it handles literally everything from streaming, caching, serialization, so that when someone takes something like Solid query, TanStack queries like Solid Adapter, all they had to do was literally wrap our create resource primitive. And now when you use it in a Solid app, it basically works as if it was native. Like you could just replace anything else we wrote, just like drop into Solid Start, Suspense, streaming, transitions, everything works out of the box. And not only does the developer not have to do anything, they don't have to worry about like the serialization that's handled automatically, but even the guys who created the library, they're just like, yeah, we didn't have to do anything different. We just literally wrapped this thing and now it works in every mode Solid operates in now and in the future. So that's super powerful. And it's, you know, kind of part of why I'm happy that we did kind of release Suspense and these primitives so long ago. But yeah, there's some goodies coming in Solid 2.0 to address async even better.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's great to hear that you guys have that support all the way down at the Solid level. And then that other developers can just hop on top and go, oh, this is great. This pattern works exactly the way we want it to. And we can just put a little wrapper around it. That's awesome.
This episode of Software Engineering Daily is brought to you by Vantage. Do you know what your cloud bill will be for this month? For many companies, cloud costs are the number two line item in their budget and the number one fastest growing category of spend. Vantage helps you get a handle on your cloud bills with self-serve reports and dashboards built for engineers, finance, and operations teams. With Vantage, you can put costs in the hands of the service owners and managers who generate them, giving them budgets, alerts, anomaly detection, and granular visibility into every dollar. With native billing integrations with dozens of cloud services, including AWS, Azure, GCP, Datadog, Snowflake, and Kubernetes, Vantage is the one FinOps platform to monitor and reduce all your cloud bills. To get started, head to vantage.sh, connect your accounts, and get a free savings estimate as part of a 14-day free trial.
I know you've said before that you didn't initially get into this for the speed, for the optimization side of Solid, but SolidJS is known for its speed, and a lot of smart compiler optimizations are needed to ensure that the framework delivers this exceptional performance. What kind of code optimizations are being used to achieve the speed?
Yeah, it's interesting because we rely on the runtime stuff more than people would realize, because I think early days we got compared to Svelte a lot, and it wasn't ironically obvious until Svelte actually has been working on this Svelte 5 thing that's more similar to Solid, that people actually realized that Solid's approach wasn't really about the compiler as much as you'd think, but there is a few things. Mostly, yeah, I guess the first thing is, high level, the compiler only compiles the JSX in Solid, just like in React, we only compile the JSX. And the reason we compile the JSX is so that we can run once. Most standard JSX transforms basically create these objects or these functions that return this object that's all resolved at that time. But reactivity is based on read. So we need everything to be lazily evaluated so that it gets run under the right context. And for that reason, we need our JSX compiler to basically wrap everything in functions. And this, funnily enough, yeah, none of the standard JSX transforms can do that. But we can actually keep the same JSX, like from a consumer standpoint, using it, you can actually keep the same, you know, TypeScript works. You can keep all the same kind of like functionality of JSX, even if the compiler is doing all these function wrapping. So a lot of our optimizations come into figuring out how to like determine what needs to be wrapped in the function and what doesn't. Like it's optimizing the compilation. Like if Solid at its basic level is handwritten, like you could just, without the JSX compiler, just literally write a bunch of create effect calls with signals and have it update one place in the DOM. So it's almost impossible for us to ever compete with the most handwritten thing, but people don't want to write that. They want to write JSX. They want to write stuff that's like easier to, you know, move around. So as I said, ironically, the compiler is, most of the optimizations are trying to make sure that the compiler doesn't add too much overhead. Like, you know, when we see that something is a function call, you know, maybe we can remove one of the functions, you know, right away. Or if something is just passed in as a variable, we know that it could never be reactive because reactives have to be, values have to be called as functions. The other interesting thing that we do, for example, is when we see similar things that update, we group them together into a single effect instead of multiple effects. It's these kind of heuristics around our compilation that basically help make it so that it's closer to how you would have handwritten it with vanilla JavaScript. So essentially, the compiler today doesn't actually make Solid faster. We're just trying to make it less slower. Solid's actually really fast if you just did it by hand. Not that everyone would want to do that.
Yeah, awesome. That's super cool.
This episode of Software Engineering Daily is brought to you by Starburst. Struggling to deliver analytics at the speed your users want without your cost snowballing? For data engineers who battle to build and scale high-quality data pipelines, Starburst Data Lakehouse platform helps you deliver exceptional user experiences at petabyte scale without compromising on performance or cost. Trusted by the teams at Comcast, DoorDash, and MIT, Starburst delivers the adaptability and flexibility a Lakehouse ecosystem promises on an open architecture that supports Apache Iceberg, Delta Lake, and Hootie, so you always maintain ownership of your data. Want to see Starburst in action? Get started today with a free trial at starburst.io/SED.
Users coming from other frameworks are going to expect a certain number of features, things like routing, server-side rendering, which we've talked about, compatibility with different bundlers, things like Toast in the UI. What is the ecosystem surrounding SolidJS like?
Obviously, we have not been around as long as other frameworks, and the adoption curve has been relatively slow. I mean, but most of the core pieces are there if you look for them. Some of it from the core team, some of it from the more extended ecosystem. Stuff like routing, server-side rendering, built into, like, we have solutions that the core team provide, hot module reloading, a lot of kind of templates kind of come with that kind of setup. There's been third-party routers that other people have written as well. There's, like, we have support in, you know, we are working on our first-party Solid Start, which is an SSR framework, but there's also, you know, Vike vplugin SSR, which supports Solid, and, you know, you can use it in Astro and whatnot. Component libraries are interesting. We don't obviously have as much of a selection, but I've been told that Cobalt UI or Cobalt.dev is one of the best component libraries that people have seen in any framework. I've never been in the market to shop for a component library, but I believe it's set up to do all the modern stuff in terms of like headless and I'm not the guy to talk about that side.
Sure.
But yeah, we have ports of a lot of common like Next.js libraries used in Next.js, like the Solid Auth. I mentioned earlier, we have all the TanStack stuff, TanStack Query, TanStack. Trying to think of what the other ones are offhand. That's the big one.
That's the one that I use. Yeah,
yeah. I think we have ports of, you know, a few other component libraries, is Material UI. Yeah, so like it's smaller. But I think what we've been seeing a lot of, which is interesting, is a lot of people making libraries that are a little bit more generic these days. And then those can, you know, basically be used with Solid anyways. I've been actually really stoked to see a lot of the work in the headless realm around this. So, you know, obviously you can pick up stuff like Tailwind and, you know, be off to the races. I'm trying to think of like some of the other big areas of what people are looking for. There's even native solutions, technically. You know, we work with stuff like Tori quite well and native script. And so you can build mobile apps. We have custom renderers, which help support that. We have Solid 3, which is like 3JS wrapper to make video games with Solid. Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of the cool thing about our reactive approach is it's relatively low in memory, so which makes it really ideal for a lot of these like embedded device type situations, you know, like television apps and stuff like that. So we've had a lot of interest from even some larger companies on that side. So with our custom renderers, yeah, I know that if you go out there and look for stuff, you'll probably find stuff that's missing, but like there's a lot more than you would think, I guess.
Yeah, and the community that's there seems very passionate about what they do. So it has the support there. It's very cool. Yeah. We've talked briefly about asynchronous code a lot and that's a feature of Solid 2.0. What else is on the horizon for Solid.js?
Yeah, I mean, 2.0 is the big one. We're looking at how to streamline, simplify the async pieces. Mostly, I love if you wouldn't have the null check. I want to do stuff similar to how React suspends throws, but do it along the reactive graph in a non-blocking way, which is insane when it all gets pulled off. But more than that, Solid Start is a big milestone for us, getting it out of beta. We've been doing a lot of work on the SSR side, and I'd love to see it all kind of come together. You know, it's funny, we've been working on this so long that we've had the opportunity to pioneer a lot of approaches that are in other frameworks that are released, but we haven't actually been able to release things like server functions, the compiled kind of like, I guess it's like, use server and React now and stuff. Like we released all that stuff over a year ago, but we've been very careful trying to get all the pieces together. And creating a meta framework is so much more than just like having the mechanics. You have to worry about all the different deployments, adapters, have all the pieces, which is a lot. So we've been working on a kind of rebase of that onto Nitro, which is the engine underneath Vue's Nuxt framework. And this will help us a lot. Just the pieces that are kind of lower level that not really in our purview, we can, you know, now use a general layer and get the support that, you know, comes like that Nuxt and others using it do. So this will help kind of unlock Solid Start, which is the other big one for us. Beyond that, we've been fortunate enough to get funding for R&D from Google Chrome team. And we've been looking a lot at doing things around partial hydration and with client-side navigation. We have done a few demos over the last year showing casing that, but again, generalizing it on this new rewrite and getting things to where it's just you know, could be mature enough to be like the standard way people build apps is really the ultimate goal here. So a lot of things up in the air right now as we were approaching the next year, but it's all really exciting stuff because like we've been at the precipice of real change in the way we approach web dev, and all the pieces seem to be coming together quite nicely right about now. So I'm very excited for what the like next 6 months or so have to bring.
Yeah, a lot of exciting stuff on the horizon for Solid. Super cool. I want to shift gears just a little bit now and talk a little bit about open source. You've been involved in open source software for quite a while now. Your current role is principal engineer for open source at Netlify. Can you sort of elaborate on what that means and how that works with Netlify and your role also in Solid and how that all works out?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Netlify has always been big on, you know, raise the water, all boats rise. I don't know the saying. You know what I mean.
A rising tide lifts all boats. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And they saw the work that I was doing because I also do a live stream and I look into stuff. And part of my work, I realized, and this started my early days in Solid. I had this problem when I started Solid. I had signals and this reactive model that basically React or the React core team had made very clear that this was a bad pattern and it should be discouraged and no one should, you know, use it all through the early years. So coming into that environment, especially when everyone's like JavaScript fatigue, like this 2016-17 period, everyone's like, oh, new framework, you know, and they're kind of like tired. It was very difficult when I come in and be like, challenge those norms. So what I realized, you know, after the first few Twitter interactions where people basically called me a liar, like, who are you? You know, you're just this guy, because like no one knew who I was back then when I joined Twitter. And I'd just get kind of laughed at, and they'd like tag other people whenever I disagreed with them. They'd tag like the framework creators. And like, I wasn't wrong. It was just like the common knowledge said otherwise. And I realized that it was futile. Every time I tried to get into these discussions, even if I wasn't trying to push my own stuff, just tried to widen the perspective of people, unfortunately it would lead to, you know, it sounding like, you know, maybe self-promotion or whatever. And it's like, no, like just there's more than one way to do something. And that made me realize that education was the only way that I was going to get out through this. So I just kept on writing and writing articles and blogs and streams and videos and just kept on pushing educational content so that people could understand or see the web development the way I do. And that meant that I worked a lot of frameworks. When MPAs and islands started coming in, you know, like Astro and, you know, this new stuff with resumability with Quick, people don't understand what it is. And again, it's very often that people on the status quo using the popular frameworks are very quick to dismiss it. They'll say something like, oh, if we thought that was a good idea, we would have already done it, you know? No, that's not the thing, you know, like, and I was like, no, let's talk about the trade-offs. Let's talk about what this looks like. So I spent a lot of time with them. When they released the first versions of their apps, I'd be like, oh, let's talk about it on stream. Let's like, I built the first router for Quick, you know, for part of a stream. I mean, it wasn't a fully functional router. It's not something I would release, but like, it was something that I needed to do to, you know, show capability of the framework. So I worked a lot with these guys. Like, how do we explain how these MPA frameworks are not the same as Next.js or SvelteKit. And through that time of educating and stuff, that's what Netlify saw. And yeah, it really interesting because as Netlify's kind of changed in over the last year or so, you know, with enterprise focus and, you know, a little bit less on like the hobbyist focus that they've had in the past, it's still valuable to have engineers working on the problems around understanding what the frameworks need, what this looks like, you know, infrastructure. I don't know if you've seen it all recently. Netlify has been just releasing tons and tons of primitives. They released blob storage, new cache APIs, new image content stuff, all in the last couple months. And a lot of this stuff comes down to integrations with frameworks and tooling where people already are at. And in so, I can serve as a conduit both between these framework developers and also just in terms of like rounding out the education and the understanding there. So yeah, it's a good setup from that perspective for them. And it's a good setup for me because they gave me a pretty open mandate, which means most of my time I do work on Solid, but you know, I constantly spend time educating and providing feedback and keeping the pulse on what's going on. You know, it's a little bit different than the standard kind of DevRel position because it's not a, instead of being DevRel, it's like framework DevRel. I don't know what else to call it. So yeah, it's been pretty cool because it gives me an opportunity to, you know, have that space that when Astro comes up with a Vue transition API, I get to make a demo and, like, you know, maybe deploy it to Netlify and see what it looks like. So there's a whole R&D thinking there. There's a chance to try all the new features. Matt Billman tap me on the shoulder occasionally, be like, what do you think about this, you know, this cool thing that I was hacking on the weekend? I'm like, yeah, let's try it. You know, let's build a AI demo using Solid or whatever. So, like, it's a very beneficial relationship for both of us. And it keeps my ties very close to open source where I came from.
Yeah, that sounds like so much fun.
Yeah.
It sounds like a mutually beneficial partnership. Yeah, now that you're working closely with Netlify, what sort of strategies and practices do you recommend for businesses and developers to engage with open source, both in terms of consumption and contribution?
Yeah, I mean, I understand this one's always tricky. And this is something I see often with Solid, because it's like, we actually rely a lot on the donations and the sponsorship of others. If there's, especially dev tool companies, if there's like a specific area that they care about, and then it aligns with open source projects, there's often a really good avenue to advertise or, like, kind of promote that thing. You know, like, if you're working on dev tools, you know, help a project with their dev tools, you know, or getting someone, you know, on board. The hardest thing is, and I think knows this, is being able to actually constantly fund people to actually work on stuff, right? Like, there's a lot of volunteers, which are great, but bigger projects are harder and they require a bigger investment that's harder to make with just, you know, people coming in occasionally. So it's like, it's basically if contribute where you can is the thing. Like, I know a lot of projects who are all like, yeah, we love using Solid. We want to also support this and, you know, contribute. And as I said, it's a tricky balance because, like, there's also, you know, sometimes, like, as I said, grants or sponsorships through Open Collective can do a lot too. Biggest challenge is getting the money then to get the manpower. It's kind of funny sometimes because people are, yeah, I get a lot of offers to do things for money. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, I'm too busy. But if you can help me enable other people in our community, then you'll get what you want. So that's the key here. It's challenging. You know, we've been in a world recently where a lot of VC money funnels into open source, which is good from the perspective that, like, stuff gets built that's worth building. But the challenge there, obviously, is that, like, you're in a very different place when you have a company behind it and you can hire people versus, you know, relying on the generosity of others. But there's a shelf on everything, right? Almost, you know, there's a clear trade-off. Companies that are formed around open source, the VC, they need a clear business plan after a couple of years. Otherwise, the money runs out. So, yeah, we've taken definitely more on the open source side. Netlify does not own Solid. It's not the Solid. There's no the Solid company, but they are a very generous patron. We're very appreciative of them in that case. And for the most part, that's what I've been looking for, more patrons. Google's Chrome, you know, gave us enough R&D funds to fund people working for, you know, 6 months or whatever on this new R&D stuff. And, you know, we've had a lot of other things. Erasure, they make one of those, like, online drawing, like, things. They help us, they put money towards our docs, and then now we have people be able to give people, you know, money towards working on our docs. And, you know, there's lots of examples like that where, you know, these alignments kind of make sense, and that's really how things get done. I know there's always a scary moment when you realize that, like, there's this project used by every large company and then no one's paying for it anymore. And it's like one developer. Like, we've seen stuff like that happen with Babel. We've seen stuff happen like that in a few other places. And it's like, it's kind of scary. But then I've also been on the other side. I've worked at a larger company when I was working at eBay. There's an open source committee. And it was like, okay, how do we use this tool here on, like, every build? How do we convince, you know, the higher ups that this is, you know, one of those things that we should be putting money towards? And it, you know, there's committees and stuff, but, you know, it takes a certain point to actually kind of push that through. And, you know, I guess it's hard to see the results of that kind of contribution all the time. You know, that's why there's a lot of foundations that help handle in the middle, like OpenJS and whatnot. But, like, luckily, at least the size Solid is right now, like, you can almost see the direct contribution. Like, it's almost like sponsoring a developer. Like, you help one developer do the work they do. But we've seen this even with kind of, like, not like the larger companies, but, like, some companies that just use Solid and being like, hey, we really care about internationalization. Can we, you know, put X amount of money forward and, you know, put it towards a fund to work on a solution for internationalization. And yeah, we'll look at how we can put those resources to use and see what we can get out of it. It's tricky, as I said, because if someone just tried to pay me to solve internationalization for Solid, again, I'd have to say no. But if we can find a way to bring others in, then that's where, you know, we can get to hopefully a point that's sustainable. And I think the Vue community especially is a prime example of how that can work in practice. Vue has somehow walked that line where they've never been owned by anything, never worked for large, like even run by like a company. And the, Evans managed to produce, you know, one of the biggest kind of teams of people working off funding that I've seen between the Vue project, the Beat project, the even certain degrees, even though this is more tertiary, like Nuxt and stuff, just to having like people working in open source almost basically full time, purely off the, you know, the money coming in. It's tricky. It's hard because there isn't that many options. And at a certain point, you know, there's a potential of the money drying up. So nothing's ever assured, but like everyone uses this software. So like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, this relationship between companies using open source software and the nature of open source software being open source, it's so interesting to me because people need to eat and that requires money, but the nature of open source is sort of that we want anybody to contribute at any level. And yeah, that relationship is super interesting to me. How do you believe that that relationship will change over the coming years, and what will the key drivers to those changes be, and how do you hope to see open source and the relationship between companies moving?
Yeah, I mean, I love stuff like the deal that I'm set up with, and even, you know, and more of these kind of sponsorship deals. And we were seeing a lot of them during the growth period before the kind of more recent economic clampdown. So I have some concerns that we're not going to see that as much in the short term. I do have concerns myself for longer running projects that are kind of already used everywhere. As I said, I would like to see more of this patron type model. But I don't know if we're in a economic situation where that really lends to it. You know, a lot of the smaller contributors started, you know, kind of the last little while, I've seen less in those donations. Times are getting a little bit tougher. And that's where the cuts happen. Yeah. So, I mean, longer term, yeah, I want to see more of this. I don't think every single open source project makes sense as a VC project. I think we've done that, you know, like sometimes a front-end framework, for example, I got offered a few times, people like, oh, start the Solid company. I'm like, what am I selling? It's because like, it's something that everyone expects to have for free. Everyone expects to be able to just build on the web. So you can build services, contract, you know, do other things, hosting, which is saturated. I think that there are certain things that should be businesses and they can use open source and leverage it. There's other things that aren't businesses and it makes it challenging. So as I said, I would love to continue seeing this kind of patronage model. I realize it's difficult and quite often that's when the resources dry up over time, but it's no different than when people take the stuff on internally, right? Maybe even worse, like I don't think any developer works on Flow at Meta anymore. There was like only one or two, but then like Flow ended up just shrinking down to it was like one guy working on it part-time, yet people are still using it outside of Meta, which was kind of scary. Most part, you know, people move to TypeScript, you know, new tools come around, but sometimes those shifts are not easy. And I think that there's going to be a few things where almost like open source bankruptcy that happens, I think, in the next few years where, you know, people are going to be like, So I'm hoping that, you know, gives us a path forward after. But the truth of the matter is like some software people aren't going to pay for it and it still needs to exist. So.
Yeah, that's the fundamental conflict. Thank you so much for your insight, Ryan. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for coming on the show.
Of course. No, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And thank you for listening to Software Engineering Daily. If you're interested more in signals and the reactive model proposed by SolidJS, I recommend reading The Evolution of Signals in JavaScript and A Hands-On Introduction to Fine-Grained Reactivity, especially that last one by Ryan Carniato. Those were fundamental to my understanding of how SolidJS works. Ryan, is there anything else you'd like to plug?
Not really, other than say, you know, come by the website, get in the Discord. That's where everything really happens. We're always talking. We're always working on stuff. So if you want to be part of it, come join the Discord. It's a great place to be.
Thank you.